This is Talk of the Nation. I'm Neil Conan in Washington. Tomorrow, organ donation. Currently, if you want to donate your organs after your death, your family can overturn that decision. A proposed change would honor a person's right to donate, even if their family says no. What do you think? Call us tomorrow at this time on Talk of the Nation. This week, Canada introduced legislation that would change its marijuana laws. The penalty for growing pot would be increased, but the idea that's getting the most attention is the decriminalization of possession of small amounts of marijuana. U.S. officials are concerned that looser laws in Canada could increase the amount of pot crossing the border to the United States. What do you think of Canada's proposal? Join the conversation. Our number is 800-989-TALK. Our email address is totn@npr.org. Mitch Earlywine is the author of Understanding Marijuana. He's an associate professor of psychology at the University of Southern California, and we reached him in Los Angeles. Good of you to be with us.
Glad to be back.
Can you explain the legislation that's introduced in the Canadian Parliament this week?
The new law would essentially make it just a civil offense if you have 15 grams of marijuana or less. So instead of having to go down and get fingerprinted and have a whole prosecution, you just simply would get the equivalent of a traffic ticket for having that much marijuana.
And 15 grams is roughly half an ounce.
Exactly.
Now, there are other laws, as we mentioned. The penalties for growing pot would be increased.
The idea is to actually increase those up to perhaps 14 years if you're cultivating marijuana. So you could be in prison for 14 years if you grew the plant itself.
There are parts of this country where marijuana growing is described as the largest cash crop, and then you take it from wherever region you want to talk about. Is this a big industry in Canada as well?
As it turns out, some of the estimates between $2 billion and probably $8 billion are pretty credible, so there's a lot of money there.
And that's a lot of money even in Canadian dollars.
Exactly.
Are there any hidden costs to this new decriminalization proposal in Canada?
Rather than hidden costs, I could see a lot of benefits. I think they're going to save a lot of money and a lot of time for law enforcement folks. When I talk to police officers in Australia, for example, where they've decriminalized, they really appreciate being able to write a ticket instead of having to go through the whole process of getting somebody booked in order to enforce these kinds of laws.
And that doesn't really say whether they're in favor of marijuana laws or not. It's just if you bring somebody in for the possession of a small amount of marijuana even today, they're not likely to do it's not a big arrest.
Yeah, the prosecutors actually don't really want to spend their time on that. In comparison, for example, in California, which has about the same population as Canada, we've saved about $200 million every year just by changing the laws to a decriminalization approach, and I'm sure Canada could save that much money as well.
Mm-hmm. How much marijuana crosses the border from Canada now? Is this an industrial level? You're talking billions of dollars. That's an awful lot of pot.
There's definitely the potential for a lot. I know the Puget Sound area, the border between, say, Washington and British Columbia, claims to have a lot of marijuana coming back and forth. But the idea that it's even a billion is still unclear and difficult to estimate.
So it's not clear that Canada is anything like a major exporter, and its obvious market would be in this country.
Well, and a whole lot of marijuana in the United States is produced domestically. So I would say at least a third of the cannabis in the United States comes from here in the United States. And I could certainly see American entrepreneurs stepping up to fill any gaps that might be shown up if Canada suddenly has worse enforcement.
Are you aware of American growers who export to Canada?
That's not a statistic that's easy to find, and I certainly don't know any personally.
You mentioned Puget Sound. Guarding the U.S.-Canadian border would be, trying to prevent this would be very, very difficult.
It'd be extremely expensive. We're talking about one of the largest borders in the world, and a whole lot of places where you could literally just step right across. There isn't. It's not like there's a giant wall in between these two countries.
Now, one of the Bush administration has said in its response to these changes in laws in Canada, which it opposes, and it's made no bones about that, but it said, if that's the case, they're worried about increased flow of marijuana across the border into the United States, and they might have to tighten controls at the border.
I think that's potentially there, but I think they might want to consider if it's really worth the price. If they do prevent all marijuana from coming down from Canada, domestic growers will just increase their production. I think Canada's going to see a lot more American tourism under this program as well. So I don't know if that's really the best use of law enforcement dollars.
Our telephone number again is 800-989-8255, 800-989-TALK. Our email address, totn@npr.org. And on the line with us is Megan, who's in Seattle.
Hello.
Hi.
Good afternoon. I'm fairly young. I'm 17, and I'm just interested in if Canada is loosening their laws as far as marijuana goes. Do you think down the road someday that could trickle down into our system and perhaps, you know, maybe down the road have legalization of marijuana?
I think, well, 12 states and the District of Columbia in the United States have already decriminalized in one form or another, and I do think at the individual state level we're probably going to see more of that. As the United States becomes more of an anomaly in this, Australia, Spain, Italy, other places have taken decriminalization approaches, I think it's going to become more and more obvious that this just isn't the best use of the money that we have.
Mm-hmm. Do you think there is a turning point as far as the view on marijuana?
Well, now with the medical marijuana statistics suggesting that 80% of Americans or more tend to approve of that, and that more and more folks feel like marijuana possession isn't something that should land you in jail, we'll gradually see a shift in that direction. I think probably at the state level first, each individual state deciding that that's the way they want to do it.
Mm-hmm.
Megan, I wonder, if you're 17, I don't see how you could have escaped all those television commercials that we see about the dangers of marijuana. Do you see them? What do you think of them?
I do. I've seen it on MTV, and they actually make me a little bit angry because they say, the one I'm specifically relating to has an advertisement for a teenager smoking marijuana. It says, I think over a million cases each, or 1% or some percentile, everybody has had marijuana of one form or another in their system. And I was running the numbers, and I didn't exactly see that.
A number of their statistics are kind of hard to follow, and some of the things don't make any sense. The one where the little girl is pregnant and they say that marijuana got her pregnant is, of course, pretty laughable.
Yes, that was kind of uncalled for. I mean, I think marijuana can be used for a lot of different things, and I think we're really focusing on the bad that it creates, and maybe, you know, if things happen and or overturn that down the road, we can see the good that can come out of it.
Well, Megan, your line's breaking up, but we appreciate your thoughts.
Thank you.
Okay. Mitch Earlywine, there's another set of commercials that are run for grown-ups, and this has to do with the linkage of marijuana to the fact that it's illegal, that this, if you're buying marijuana, you're supporting, in their argument, is terrorism and international gangsters.
I, in fact, wrote the Office of National Drug Control Policy about that particular commercial because it just doesn't make any sense to me, and they've decided that they're probably going to pull that because so much of marijuana in the United States comes from the United States, it really just doesn't follow that this is supporting a terrorist act somewhere on the other side of the world. I do think also some of the allusions that this leads to date rape or even impaired driving is sometimes overstated in these commercials.
Mm-hmm. Yet it certainly is illegal. There are certainly any number of people in this country, thousands of people in this country, in jail for relatively small amounts of marijuana.
Oh, it's pretty insane. Over 700,000 people were arrested on marijuana-related offenses last year, and over 80% of them were just simple possession charges. So if we didn't have to actually arrest those people and could simply write them a ticket, you can imagine all the law enforcement time and money we could save, and as well as time in the justice system.
Now, we talked about this as an industry in Canada. How big a business is this in the United States?
The $10 billion estimate is probably the most accurate as far as that's concerned, and you can imagine it's one of the top three or four cash crops here in the United States.
And if you're growing that much marijuana, it's hard to imagine that you can do it very long or very successfully without a lot of people knowing that you're doing it.
That is definitely the case, and you can see how that could lead to certain forms of corruption within law enforcement. It's also led to some disrespect for the law among our citizens. And I think if we did move to a decriminalization policy, people would have less of that problem.
We're discussing the decision in Canada to consider changes in marijuana laws. Again, some of the penalties for growing marijuana would be increased. But the one idea that's getting the most attention is to decriminalize possession of about half an ounce of marijuana or less. Our guest is Mitch Earlywine. You're listening to Talk of the Nation from NPR News. And let's get another caller involved, Angela. Angela joins us on the line from San Jose, California.
Hi, how are you?
Okay.
Great. I was just wondering what the reasoning, I guess I understand the reasoning, but my problem with the idea of decriminalizing possession of marijuana, but then having more stringent laws with growing marijuana, what that makes me think is that what you're really doing is encouraging illegal drug trade, say from Mexico or from other places like that.
I agree. I'm afraid you're right. The idea of cracking down on growers now may actually inadvertently increase that underground market. An idea that was originally floated was that maybe each person could have two plants, for example, might make it much easier for individuals to grow their own cannabis and not be connected to any other underground market. Also, that underground market is often where people get exposed to drugs that really create problems, like cocaine and heroin and things like that. So I feel like this Canadian step is a step forward, but maybe the cracking down on growth of the plant has been something just to sort of appease the Bush administration.
I agree.
Angela, thanks very much for the call.
Thank you.
When you're talking about that, though, I mean, there's one, I guess, idea behind, well, you know, this person has, you know, less than half an ounce of marijuana. Clearly, that's for their own use and, you know, not a threat to become a major distributor. On the other hand, somebody who's growing industrial amounts of marijuana and distributing it, with the way the laws are now, this person is a criminal.
And in fact, I completely understand that, but do we decide that somebody's a criminal for having a single plant in his backyard that's obviously for his own use? And I think at least there have been some mutterings in Canada that they would crack down along those lines. We'll have to see if that really plays out.
So this would be along the lines of during prohibition of alcohol in this country, you were allowed to brew your own home beer or ferment some wine.
And in fact, as long as it wasn't so much that it looked like you were going to be dealing in some way, people seemed to turn a blind eye.
And again, it's that dealing part that I guess gets people upset. Do you think that this Canadian legislation, obviously the effect on the Bush administration has been to make it very critical of the Chrétien government in Ottawa?
I really don't understand that critique, because this is really going to save Canadians a lot of money, and their law enforcement and judicial system can focus on more important things like violent crime.
Where do you think the legislation, I guess Maryland is the most recent state in this country, to pass a medical marijuana law? There is still obviously an enormous tension with the federal government, which insists that these laws, well, they may be on the books in the states, but they're not going to be recognized by the federal government, which regards marijuana as a controlled substance, and that's the law in Congress. Do you see that this is going to be a movement that is going to spread from state legislatures to the Congress of the United States?
In fact, the Congress of the United States already has a bill before it to at least leave distributors of medical cannabis alone if their states have approved medical use. And I do feel like this is on the rise. Every time I'm on the radio, there's a new number and a higher number of states who've approved medical cannabis. 80% of Americans approve it. The idea that each individual state could arrange to distribute medical marijuana in its own way seems consistent with the ideas of federalism that the United States was supposed to stand for.
There are a lot of laws that get introduced in Congress. Some of them have a chance of passage. Do you think this one does?
I think it's got a better chance than it ever has. It's got more co-sponsors than I've seen it have in the past, and I feel like a lot of folks are ringing the phones off the hook in their legislators' offices to make sure that they understand that they really support this idea.
A better chance than ever. I'll take that as a no, it doesn't have a chance of passage.
Well, I'm cautiously optimistic.
You're cautiously optimistic. And given those statistics, I think we have time for one more caller. Shane joins us on the line from Raleigh, North Carolina. Shane, if you could keep it quick.
Yes, I was just wanting to say that based on President Bush's foreign policies, I can't believe that if he wants to oppose this law in Canada that he will not, and find a way through economic trade or some other means to make sure that this doesn't get enacted in Canada.
Well, Mitch Earlywine, a lot of people say the threat to tighten up border controls is exactly that.
And in fact, I do think that's consistent with a kind of economic sanction on the Bush administration's part. We'll have to see if Canada has the guts to sort of stand up to that.
Shane, I'm afraid we're out of time, but we appreciate your phone call.
Thank you.
Mitch Earlywine, also thanks to you for speaking with us today.
My pleasure to be back, Neil.
Mitch Earlywine is the author of Understanding Marijuana. He's an associate professor of psychology at the University of Southern California. We reached him in Los Angeles, California. In Washington, I'm Neil Conan, NPR News.